And one of the most important things that we can, as Christians, learn to see in our lives is the unveiling of the myth of scarcity. That there's not enough to go around. That for some reason we are going to be left without something. We saw the myth of scarcity play out really well during the pandemic when people were going to the grocery store and buying up as much toilet paper as they possibly could get. Because they fell for the myth of scarcity that the first thing to go in a global pandemic is going to be toilet paper. And so I need to get as much of it as possible because I am scared. I am fearful that I will be without something. But we live in the world of the kingdom. Because what the myth of scarcity does is it robs us of our ability to see kingdom abundance. It robs us of our ability to see a God who is first and foremost loving and generous to his people. I want to read a story from Luke. And this story has two parts, and we're going to read it in two parts because it's a lot to digest in one sitting. I know we've been going through Mark, and this is going to flip your minds, that there are other books of the Bible, not just Mark. But we're going to be in Luke today, and just 1 week, I promise, and then we'll go back to our regularly scheduled programming. But this is a parable that only appears in Luke. I almost said Mark, but it's Luke. And we're going to look at Luke chapter 12. It's verses 13 through 21. This is the parable of the rich fool. Now, if you are called a fool, it's not a good thing. It might be funny. It's a funny word. You're a fool. But in the Bible, a fool is not a good thing. A fool is a person who is not living the way that they should be living. It's a very mild insult. Also, rich was not a very good thing to be called as well. So when we start off with the parable of a rich fool, we're already two in the hole. We know that this is not a great person that's living life to the utmost. So let me read this to you, and then we will continue on. Verse 13 says, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher," talking about Jesus, "tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain man, rich man, yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." And then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'Self, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you, and then who will get what you will have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God.'" Notice that there's an abundance in this story. There is an abundance of crops. There is an abundance of storage space. There is an abundance of things that we don't necessarily need an abundance of. God in his grace and his mercy has said, we're going to have a good crop year. Now the question is, what do we want to do with it? You're rich, but are you a fool? You're a fool, but are you rich? It can go both ways. Jesus is responding to someone in the crowd, asking him to resolve a family inheritance dispute, and he uses the moment to address deeper issues of greed and trust and kingdom of God. The man in the crowd asks Jesus to intervene in this dispute over inheritance. And he's pointing out, notice how he doesn't want to resolve the dispute. Notice how he uses this as an opportunity to say, hey, you know what? Maybe don't be greedy. Jewish law was very strict in inheritance. The oldest son got a double portion of the inheritance, and everyone else split what was left over. That's why the story of the prodigal son is so important, because the younger son wants to split up the inheritance before the father is even gone. The older son gets his double portion, and the younger son gets the smaller, whatever's left over, and he's unhappy with that. There's an abundance there that he gets, but he's not happy with. Jesus uses this moment to point out the danger of greed, which is rooted in the fear that there is not enough to go around. It's interesting how Jesus does this, that greed, we think we just want more and more and more. We're hungry, we're hungry, we're hungry. But Jesus takes our basic idea of emotion. He takes this basic idea of greed and he says, greed is not about more, it's about less. Greed is about your fear that there will not be enough. And the only reason that you're greedy, the only reason that you're desiring more is because you internally are frightful that there will not be enough. And this is what the trap of greed is. It brings us to this myth of scarcity, this belief that there is not enough, whether it be time or money or resources or love. It leads us to hoard, to compete, to protect what we think is ours, to grab more and more and more and more and want more and more because there's just not enough, right? We grew up in this economy believing that there's not going to be enough. Last one, limited time only, limited edition. Get them while you can, they're going fast. This deal won't last long. If you act now, we will double your order. It's all around us because we are driven by the fear that there will not be enough to meet our needs, that greed is consuming our lives because we are so frightful of what we might miss out on. We live in a culture that is driven by an economy rooted in myth that there is not enough, but we also live within the biblical narrative that repeatedly emphasizes that God created the world and loves it immensely and will sustain it. The first thing we learn about God on the very first page, that God is a giver. That God is a creator, that God created humans to live on this earth that he gave and created for us and rooted us in a garden so that all of our desires would be met. And as far as we could see, there was no want. There was no lack of things. We did not have greed in the garden because we did not have fear of running out of things. And the thing that we know about God first and foremost is that he loves his people, he loves his creation, and he says, I want to give to you. And he proves it time and time again. But this mythology of scarcity, it preys on our fears, especially the fear that there will not be enough in the world to provide for us, and thus that we might starve, or otherwise we might be deprived of something that we so greatly need. Not necessarily want, but that, well, yeah, maybe we have conflated the two ideas, that want and need are the same thing. That if I don't have it, then I definitely can't live without it, so I need this extra thing. I need something more in my life to give me definition, to tell me how to live my life. But Jesus warns in verse 15, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. So greed is more than just wanting. It's the spiritual sickness fueled by fear. Jesus makes clear that life is not measured by an abundance of possessions. And it's this duality, it's this tension that God is a God of abundance, but abundance is not what defines our lives. At least not abundance of possessions. At least not the greed to want more, the insatiable desire Jesus issues an emphatic warning to the crowd to be on guard against these insatiable desires of greediness, because the meaning and value of one's life is not established through accumulating abundant possessions, not by grabbing more and more, by wanting and desiring. Jesus offers the rich man of the parable as a type of a person who chooses inordinate self-concern over kingdom living. You see, all of our desires are shaped by this myth of scarcity and how we can submit our desires to be transformed by God and toward God. According to the myth of scarcity, there is never enough to go around, but it is not simply the hunger of those who lack sufficient food to keep their bodies in good health. Scarcity is more the general hunger of those who want more without reference to what they already have. That we just crave blindly to go more and more and bigger and better. And I think that the myth of scarcity causes our churches to do the same thing, that we have a hard time sharing what we have, the resources already in our midst. Churches in our area said, you know what we have? We have too many people. So I'm going to tear down this old church and I'm going to build a bigger church because we just have too many people. And we want to hang on to all of our people because they're ours. God has given us people. So let's tear down our barns and build bigger ones. Imagine how that parable changes when we don't see crops, but we see people. That when we say God is abundant in the way that He gives people, and how do we direct that then? How do we direct our resources to say, you know what? We're good right here. Let's start a new church. Instead of tearing down the old ones, let's just start new ones. But we don't think in that mindset. We think of, well, if I don't have these people, I'll never get any more people ever in my life. You see, money is always about more than just money. Money is tied to emotions. It's tied to our memories. It's our spending and our saving and really our general attitude toward materialism in general. How we treat money, how we live with it, determines how we will be focused on Christ in the kingdom. How does the myth of scarcity manifest in your life today? Whether it's money or success or control, we often live as though there isn't enough, forgetting that God is our provider. We want more because there isn't enough. And how is that represented in your life? What is it that you're thinking you need more of? What is it that you are thinking that you want to grab before it's gone? Is it material things? Is it control? Is it love? Is it money? What is guiding your life in scarcity that you have to have it? And then we get into this idea of hoarding. You ever seen that show, Hoarders? Oh, that's a scary place to be. That's a mess. Now, some of these people have legitimate mental capacities for hoarding. But some of them just got lazy. Some of them are just like, you know what, I need to keep this because you never know when I'm going to get another one. Or I have three of them, but that's just not enough because they've stopped making this and I just need to find more of them. And more of them, and more of them, and more of them. And pretty soon, our houses become a testament. They become an altar to this idolatry idea that we need more. This parable of the rich fool, it's about a bountiful harvest, but he decides he wants to build bigger barns to store his wealth, believing that by accumulating more, he can secure his future. Eat, drink, and be merry, I say. I got enough to go around. My future's good now. Everything's been decided because at least I have a big barn now. I'm good to go because my barn is bigger than everyone else's barn. And so now, guess what? I'm never going to desire anything else ever again in my life. Until the next crop. Until down the street, he gets a bigger barn because he's got more crops. And so now I need to plant more and more because my barn is too small now. And this cycle repeats itself on and on. And it creates this illusion of security. This idea that if we have enough in our barns, that we are secure, that we're good to go, that if I have this, then I'm good to go. If you could just grant me this, God, I'm good to go. I'll be secure in life for as long as you keep that supplied. The rich man is convinced that his abundance will give him what? Rest and peace. That if I have this barn, I can rest and be merry and be happy and go free. But Jesus reveals the foolishness of trusting in material wealth as his life will be demanded of him that very night. What good is our wealth if we're gone? What have we secured for our future if our lives are gone? If we've been destroyed in this kingdom, if we've along the way have lost who we are. What's so wrong, though, about storing crops? Is there no place in God's economy for bigger barns? Is there no place in God's kingdom for bigger churches? Is there no place in my life for a bigger house or a bigger car? Is there no place for that? What's so bad with storing up for the future? What's so bad with putting a little bit away so that in an emergency, I'm safe and secure and I've got that feeling of I will be set for life? Perhaps it is anxiety that causes the rich man to build bigger barns, to try and secure himself against any perceived threat to his being. That if life starts to get too hairy for him, at least I've got a big barn with lots of crop. After all, this is what Joseph did for Pharaoh. He listened to Pharaoh's dream and he said, you know what, we're going to have 7 years of abundance and 7 years of famine. We should start right now. We should get to work. And that's good. That's good planning. That's a good idea to put something away. But he makes himself the source of this goodness. He cuts himself off from the only source of faithfulness in the midst of a vulnerable world. You see, what was different between Joseph and the rich fool was that Joseph was doing this for God. God has given him this ability to perceive the dream and says, let's use this for good. And then Pharaoh used it for bad because they all collected collateral. Anytime in those 7 years in the famine that they would come up, well, we need your land from you. Put this up as collateral so that we can give you what we have. We have an abundance of grain, but we want to make it seem like we don't. We can't give it away. We need something that you can put up. And thus, Israel becomes slaves in Egypt. Because during the famine, they give away all their land, and now they're slaves in their own nation. Because they bought into the myth of scarcity. They bought into the idea of Pharaoh saying, no, 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 there's not enough here. We need to ration this. So if you could just give me something in return, then I can give you the things that you need to live. With all this excess in the center of his life, the man plunges into the trap of idolatry, an idolatry that is often idolized by our culture. The nearly constant message in today's media is that life does indeed consist of the abundance of possessions. We are encouraged to spend more, to have more, to use more, to supersize and maximize, to bank on the appearance of wealth as a sign of a good and healthy life. Jesus doesn't care. He really, really does not care if you're living a rich life. He really, really does not care if your clothes are brand new. He really, really does not care at all about those things. Jesus cares about the heart. He cares about the internal. And if we're building up these external structures to push out the fear, to save ourselves from embarrassment later on. Because who knows what could happen? Jesus says, I don't care. I don't care how strong you think you are. I don't care how strong you think your house is. I don't care how big your house can grow. I don't care about any of that stuff. Jesus says, I am after your faith. I'm after your trust in me. Because I am the source of your abundance. Insofar as the culture cultivates a propensity to buy things we do not need, it champions a way of life that this parable characterizes as foolish. But there are spiritual consequences to hoarding. Hoarding resources not only fails to bring security, yeah, that's number one, but it also blinds us to the needs of others and opportunities to live generously. When we feel like we are stuck in this scarcity, we are not looking out at the rest of the world. We are believing, I can't give you this thing because then I won't have enough. And God, forgive me, I've been there. You've been there. Because we get stuck in this loop that says, I can't help you because I need to help myself first. And Jesus doesn't care. He doesn't. He's saying, I am the God of abundance and I've given you this as a gift. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to go and make money off of it, or are you going to bury it in the ground and be embarrassed by it? Oh, you forgot about that parable, didn't you? Because Jesus has a lot to say about people who want to dig up the ground and put it in there and say, no one can touch it. When we live in this way where we are concerned about how big our barn is, it means we're not giving it away. That means we're turning a blind eye to people around us and saying, no, 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 no. I'm going to need something from you in order for us to make this work. The problem is that our desires are oriented toward things that will not satisfy. What's the direction of our heart? What's the direction of our life? These things that we think we need to collect because they're in short supply, they will never satisfy us, ever, 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 ever. And Jesus doesn't care how many of them you buy, how many of them you get. He says, I want you to redirect your life and your heart toward me. Desire God. We end up desiring things for their own sake rather than the great pleasure of God. In what ways are you tempted this morning to build bigger barns? What places in our lives are you looking and saying, okay, this area of my life could be expanded, God. This area of my life could use some tuning up. I feel the scarcity there, God. How are we tempted to store up for ourselves out of fear rather than trusting in God's provision? What's our attitude towards sharing and generosity? How can we continue in this way? How can we become more generous with the things that we've already been given? Now, Jesus says that parable, and then he answers his own thing. He says, I told you that thing to tell you this, and I want to read you the solution to the problem. There is the myth of scarcity, there's abundance, there's greed, there's all these icky, horrible things that our lives have developed. But Jesus answers those things. And in fact, it just takes one line for him to answer. Let's continue in that passage, picking up at verse 22. Then Jesus said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life. Wait a second. Do not worry about my life. See, I thought worry was about fear. I thought anxiety in my life was about fear. Jesus is telling me that worry goes with greed. Jesus is telling me that worry and greed are attached to each other, that the simple fix to being greedy is not to worry. See, I thought all along this was telling me not to fear. But Jesus is telling me, don't be greedy, just don't worry. He says, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, or what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Now, consider the ravens. They do not reap or sow. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable are you than birds, right? How much more valuable are you than birds? Like, how much more valuable are you than birds? Do we live our lives believing that of ourselves? What if Jesus was actually believable here? What if we lived our lives believing that we were more valuable than birds? I don't know. Maybe that wouldn't change anything in my life. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. And here's the great thing that Jesus says. He says, you know the people that run after such thing? They're pagans. He says in verse 30, for the pagan world runs after such things, and your Father knows that you need them. Amen for that. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Notice he didn't say, build a bigger barn for yourself, and I'll give you things that you can fill it with. He says, first and only, let's seek after the kingdom. And then you will see that the things that you need are not the things that you want. That the things that the world wants you to accumulate, the things you think you need to put in your barn, those things won't matter anymore. If you seek the heart of God first, the things won't matter anymore. That God will put into your life the things that you need, that he knows that you need, that he said, I've been preparing these things for you. This is what you need. Verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. See, that's what I know about my God. He is pleased to give me these things that I need. He's pleased that we rely on his generosity and his greatness and his abundance to say, God, I am in such a mess here. God, my family is falling apart. God, my house is falling apart. God, my job is falling apart. I cannot hold it together. And he says, I've got exactly what you need. Just seek me first. Don't seek your own will to try and fix all of these little problems that you have. Because there will be problems, and there will be problems, and there will be problems, and there will be problems, on and on. We've created them for ourselves. We've created these little problems that continue on and on and on forever. And we'll always be worried about them popping up, and we'll always be anxious to see their faces again. And Jesus says, don't seek their faces, seek my face. He's like, you don't want to be anxious in life? Seek my face. He's like, you want to feel rich? Seek my face. You want everything that you've ever desired? Seek my face. Tired of being greedy, tired of chasing after all those things that the world wants you to chase after, seek my face. And then we'll see how we really live. Then we'll see who's rich in life and who's not. He finishes up, he says, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moths destroy. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also. Ouch. Are we preparing purses for ourselves that don't get destroyed by moths? Are we creating for ourselves barns that won't be destroyed by fire and flood and dryness? We can't. It's impossible. We can't do those things. Because God is telling us that if you try and trust in yourself and build bigger barns, then you are never going to be free of anxiety. You will never be free of these fears that you have of losing things or missing out on things or driving things away in your life. Jesus turns from the parable to address his disciples, urging them not to worry about their very basic needs, because life is more than food and the body is more than clothes. And perhaps this is easier said than done. I'm not denying that. I'm not denying that you're going to walk out of here today and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that was so good, I'm never going to worry ever again in my life. That's just not reality, right? That's because Jesus wants us to recall this time and time and time again. Because we are going to go out of here and we're going to worry. We're going to get into the parking lot and we're going to worry. We're going to worry about our kids playing near the street. We're going to worry about what we want for lunch. We're going to worry about this and the money and all the other things. And that's just 15 steps to the parking lot. But Jesus is saying, I know you're going to worry. I know it's not easy to stop worrying, but I want you to stop focusing on those things. And I want you in those moments to seek my face. And I know you're going to worry, but I want to come alongside you and I want to tell you that things are going to be fine. Because I care about the birds. And if I care about the birds, then I'm going to care about you even more. You know, the ravens are fed by God and the lilies are clothed in beauty by God without the slightest bit of worry, but they don't possess what we have, and that is an understanding of who we are, this consciousness. They can't see the future. They can't understand the future. They can't feel that trepidation of what comes next. We know that we know, and that means that we know that we exist, and someday we will cease to exist, and thus we live with anxiety. Ravens don't care if they live or die. Lilies don't care if they live or die. We care. But should we? God has called us into this great life. And if we constantly live with the fear of dying, of going away, what are we going to do with our... We're going to waste our lives by focusing on this place, because it's going to cause us to put up walls, security systems that say, you can't get in. And it's going to give us this false sense of security, and it's going to lead to hoarding and greed. And then we start the cycle again. And then we just release that and say, you know what, God? My life isn't mine, it's yours. Send me where you send me, take me when you want me. And that's frightening for us to say. And I'm not here this morning to tell you that you need to start living your life as if you're going to die tonight. I'm not here to say that, because that's a frightening thought for us. But what if you did? How does that change abundance in your life? How does that change scarcity in your midst? How does that change what you desire for yourself and for the people around you? You see, the root of our anxiety is this belief that we are on our own, that we must secure our future, that if we can't do it, it won't happen. But Jesus reminds us that God knows what we will need and will provide. Anxiety is always the story of what if. What if this happens? What if this thing comes crashing down on us? What if I don't live to see the next month? What if I lose my job because of this one mistake that I made? What if my kids get sick? What if all of these things? And this is what our anxiety does for us. We live in this what if mentality. My response to what if is always, what if the sky turns to fire and burns our eyes out? What if? Let's walk down that path. What if those things happen? But let me introduce you to another phrase that we use a lot. It's not necessarily what if, it's if only. And we know that we're marked by greed and scarcity, and we're not trusting God if we use the phrase if only. If only I had a better car. Oh, if only my kids would listen to me. If only I had a better job. If only I could win the lottery. If only we had a building. If only fill in the blank in your own life. Because there's something in you, there's some phrase, there's something that you've taken to God in prayer and earnestness and said, God, if only I had this, how different would life be? How could we create a better world if only we had these things? Now, here's the great, or maybe the sad part of this if only statement. We don't say if onlys except for ourselves. Imagine if you started using if only for other people. If only we had peace in our community. If only we had a church that understood how much God loves them. If only in my family they understood the love of God. If only I could share with more people. If only I had an opportunity to live with gratitude. If only, God, you would take my heart and change it for you. If only you would tell me where you want me to go, God. If only you would send me to the places that I hate. If only, God, you would give me an opportunity to talk to people I don't agree with. If only, God, I could stop being a fool. You see how we can take this phrase and now transform it into kingdom work. Greed is distinguished by these if only statements, but we only feel like we need them for the things that we want. And so we seek first the kingdom. See, Jesus doesn't leave it there. He just doesn't say, oh, stop worrying, you'll be fine. Leave it by the roadside, everything's good. He gives us a new focus in life. He stops us in our tracks and he says, don't worry. Instead, seek my face. Seek my presence in everything that you do. Instead of chasing after material things, we are to seek his kingdom, trusting that all we need will be added to us. Only when our desires are oriented toward the Creator will we find fulfillment in the things of creation. In the interest of survival, we cling desperately to resources, sharing them sparsely, if any at all, with others in need. But in God's kingdom, there is enough for everyone. If you don't take anything from this today, take this one thing, that there is enough. We need to stop living our lives with a scarcity mentality, and we need to believe in a God that provides enough for us. Our God is more than enough. And that's not just for love, and that's just not for grace or to transform the world. Our God is more than enough to meet our needs on a daily basis. Give us this day our daily bread, what we can eat for now. Like the wanderers in the desert, let's gather the manna just for today, because otherwise it's going to turn to worms and it's going to rot on us. And it will, because that's what Jesus promises. Take as much as you want. That's fine. That's fine. There's an abundance of that. Take 3, 4, 5 quarts for each person in your family. But it's gonna get rotten. You're gonna lose it. Instead, seek after me. Jesus invites us to shift our focus from earthly treasures, which can be stolen and destroyed, to treasures in heaven where our heart will be truly secure. But this leads to a life of generosity and care for others. The parable calls on all rich and poor alike to reflect carefully about what we want and why we want it. Are our desires and standards for what is enough driven by a determination to store treasures for our own pleasure or by an understanding of God's blessing and our true purpose in life? Will we measure our lives by the standard of the media, seducing us to want more and more, or by the call of the gospel to be rich toward God? What does that actually mean, to be rich toward God? It is a trust in God's benevolence toward us. Trust that it is God's good pleasure to give us the kingdom that grounds our otherwise ungrounded existence. It's prayerfully trusting that God will provide the needs of life. Jesus said, "What does it profit them if they gain the whole world, but they forfeit themselves?" Think about Calvin's famous definition of faith. Faith is a firm and certain knowledge of God's benevolence towards us, founded upon the truth of the freely given promise in Christ, both revealed to our minds and sealed upon our hearts through the Holy Spirit. Faith is a firm and certain knowledge of God's benevolence towards us. Said it a little easier, faith is knowing that God is good. Always. This morning, I want to challenge you to find those areas of greed and scarcity in your life. Those places that you're not trusting God, where you're saying, what if, and if only. And you're using these phrases to justify your generosity. Next week, we're going to talk about how we can live with an abundance mindset, which is living in generosity and hospitality and gratitude. Because when we're not grateful, we're not living in abundance. When we're not generous and hospitable to people, we're not living in abundance. We're living in a scarcity mentality that we're bringing back on ourselves. But I want to invite you to find those places in your life that you're saying, what if, and if only. And seek the face of God in those moments.